Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Photo. It's just me, on my own. Carl's here, though. Say hello, Carl.
Hello.
There we go. So we've got some in-studio presence that will help us through the difficult times of me doing nothing but asking and answering questions that you're going to put in the chat room or you're going to send via Twitter. So that's the theory. Whether it actually turns into a decent show that we post or not, different matter. This could be unique. The people in the chat room may be the only people that ever see this, along with Carl. Okay. So let's get straight off to it then. First question. Decroyter in the chat room says, what does photography have to do with SOPA? Stop Online Piracy Act is about stealing stuff, isn't it? So basically anything that people steal, technically I suppose SOPA would apply to it. So if you've got a photography website and people are nicking stuff, then there should be no reason why people couldn't actually prohibit the use of it and actually take away your website based on SOPA complaints and that kind of stuff. The problem with SOPA, though, is the fact that there's no judicial oversight with it or a review, is it? It's just a case of if they feel like taking it down, that's it, it's gone. It's not like the DMCA even, where there's a declaration of takedown notice or anything like that at the moment. It's just too draconian. Good idea, badly done. There we go. But it could apply. There's no question it couldn't apply to photography. But I've got to say for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, I've never put anything online I don't want stolen. I've never had like a portfolio website and that kind of stuff. To me, the person that puts up a portfolio probably doesn't take many pictures, to be honest. They're just trying to show off with stuff that they've got because they don't. Thank you, darling. It's my daughter. So there you go. I wouldn't put anything online anyway because of it being stolen unless I wanted it to be Creative Commons, and then I'd specify it as Creative Commons anyway, so it doesn't matter. Yep, don't put it if you don't want it nicked. Well done. Good point. Question two. What we got? Is Carl playing rugby with Ewan tomorrow? Carl's big enough to be a good second row. No?
No.
The wife's bringing in the tea. You can clearly see this is an informal show. And the daughter's here. Hello, little girl. Oh, it's all right. We're fine. We'll shut the door. Next question. Can you recommend a small tripod for my point and shoot? Getting fed up with the camera shake when I'm taking pictures of the birds in the garden, says Sarah. To be honest, if you're only taking pictures of birds in the garden and that kind of stuff, then you probably don't need a great deal. I bought an aluminium tripod. I can't remember the name of it. It's in the van. From Aldi, £12. Came in a carry bag. It went, I think it was about 5 foot tall, something like that. So it's not a decent, not bad for size. Very, very stable. Got a center mount that goes into the center pole to hold it steady. Clip and go feet, just like you'd expect. And really, to be honest, if you go down to your local Argos, you'll probably find some very, very passable tripods in there for £20 and above. You don't need to spend an absolute fortune. If you want a carbon fibre one that's super light and you can carry it around, you can spend £200 or £300 quite comfortably. Go down to your local Calumet or Jessop's and get something from them. But I've got to say, I don't really see the benefit of having really expensive tripods. I've got a really, really good one that's super heavy. I certainly wouldn't carry it out into a field or something like that. But it goes to 8 feet tall with the thing fully extended, so I can get right up and shoot down on things. And that was super expensive. But, I mean, I probably use that on a daily basis, almost every other day at least. But tripods, watch out for zoom lengths, because you'll get a certain point as well. If your camera's got optical and digital zoom, your optical zoom, if it's one of these crazy optical zooms like you'll get on the bridge cameras, then what you'll find is that because they're so far extended, they'll be very, very sensitive to movement. Last week I took on the photo walk with Elmug, I took my 400mm lens down, and Aaron Claydon had a go at shooting with it and put it on the camera. And at 400mm, when he just threw it up on his little DSLR, he couldn't hold it steady enough to take a picture of a gantry crane. And it was a fairly bright day as well at f5.6. So you've got a very good chance of it not holding well. And some of these ones are going up to 1,280 millimetres and things like that, which is just absolutely crazy. You're never going to hold that still. And even if you've got a very good tripod, some camera shake will still occur from it. You're never going to get perfect. Also look at things like floorboards and that type of stuff. Because if you've got bouncy floorboards, if you're inside shooting birds out in the garden, you're still wasting your time. Might as well just hand hold it. So come back on the zoom and then crop in Photoshop later just to get the extra magnification that you want. What's my opinion on putting UV filters on lenses, and are you a put it on and leave it person, or do you choose it for the moment? UV filters are absolutely essential purchases. You buy yourself, I've got a lens that I bought when I was in America, $3,500 worth of lens, and I'm stood there and the guy says, you want a UV filter for that? And I said, yeah. He said, how much, which one do you want? And there's one there for $15. You get a lens, you put a UV filter on your lens, unless it's one that you've bought off eBay that you're not really worried about, that you just wanted to have a play with, and if it gets scratched, then who cares? But every single one of my lenses has got UV filters on. It's stupid not to buy them. You can get them off eBay for upwards of £3 onwards. So have a look around. Always get a UV filter. Absolutely get a UV filter and always put it on. It does virtually nothing to the image particularly, so it's just there for protection for me, nothing more than that. And the thing with UV filters is that you've got to watch out and keep them clean, because they're a screw thread in, and you get a lot of dirt and dust will get in there, God knows how, because it feels like it's a real snug fit, but for the life of me, you still get dust in. Make sure you take them off, make sure you clean them both sides, and always make sure you clean the inside and screw it back on before you clean the outside, because then if you clean the outside, you'll put dust back on the inside and seal it in the lens. My next question was about keeping them clean. All right, no worries. Was that Sharon's shot of the shard? Was that what it was used for? Yeah, he ended up using Alex's shoot me stick that he's got. The is it Hammer? HAMMA?
It's just a monopod.
It's HAMMA. I'm sure of it. Hammer, and it was like £9 off eBay, yeah, or something like that. Oh no, off Amazon.
It was a 10 at a time. I think it's got like 15 now.
Because it's so popular, you see, because of the Photoshop listeners, mm-hmm, or photo listeners. But yeah, he had it on that, had it on the monopod. It's sprung loaded as well, isn't it? It seems really good.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you put it in and just balance it on that. And all he had to do was monopod it to get a decent shot. He didn't have to worry about tripods and things like that. Sarah, maybe even a little monopod for a tenner. Give it a go. On a Canon 400D, I shoot mostly handheld using aperture priority. What's the lowest speed I should be aiming to shoot at when I'm out walking with the dog? Are you taking the picture while you're walking, and is the dog pulling on the lead on the hand that's got the camera? Or are you standing still and watching the dog run around and trying to take pictures of the dog while he's moving? I shot last Saturday inside a market with Aaron Claydon's camera to get right up close to something and take a macro image of it. It's on the Flickr group. It's like a green fruity type thing. And that was, I shot that at 1/15th, 1/10th, but I braced myself against the edge of the market stall and got myself pretty steady. And I've got through practice probably, I'd count on myself to shoot at 1/15th and still have it clear. If you're talking about generally shooting handheld, I wouldn't get below 1/60th for the average person, and probably 1/125th would be more realistically stable. If the dog's running around and you're trying to take a picture of the dog, you're going to have to go to 1/250th, maybe something like that, 1/500th, before you'll start to get some very little blurring in it. 1/1000th to be sure. If you're shooting birds that move quickly, you're going to have to be at 1/1000th, 1/2000th, blue tits and things like that. As soon as they see the camera just start to focus, they'll be gone. So, they're incredibly fast. I've set cameras up in the garden on remote control triggers with no manual focus. The thing's just going to open the shutter the second I press the button, and I've still got the bird half out of the image flying away. They're that fast. Like a squirrel out of over the hedge. /focal length. What's the lowest speed I should be aiming to shoot with walking at the dog? That creates fun. No, still standing still. Yeah, standing still, you should be able to shoot at 1/60th without a problem. go practice though. That's the key part. Things like tucking elbows in, holding the camera still that way, getting the extra support off your body. Those are good practice techniques. They'll get you down to 1/30th quite comfortably. But 1/15th, about the limit. Anything like that. I've shot 1/8th, but I was trying to show off then. What's the question there, Decroper? 1/focal length. No, that's 1/50th of a second, 1/100th of a second, whatever. How long did it take before you were making a living at photography and to get a good name for myself? based on the kicking that I got on the RAW versus JPEG article, I haven't got a good name for myself, I don't think. It's one of those things. There isn't a point where I kind of stopped. It was like I did other things and then I just started making more money than anything else. I've never not done two or three things to make money. Am I dependent on being a photographer? No, I've got other streams of income as well that I use, which is nice over places like Christmas because no one wants you just a couple of weeks before Christmas for anything, and hardly anyone wants you the first 2 weeks of January. So you've got a month to survive there. So if you know it's a very difficult time anyway. Plus, being a commercial photographer is extremely difficult. Full stop. It's such a competitive market, especially things that are in the domestic line like weddings and portraits and that kind of stuff. I'm fortunate that most of the customers that I work for pay for me by the day, so they don't pay me by per shot or by per hour or that kind of stuff, and I spend a day with them doing the stuff that they want, so, and it's all bespoke stuff, so it's really specialist. I don't know. I have no clue actually when I've earned enough that I could have just said I'm just a photographer. I've always done other things. Sorry. Maybe it's a silly question, Ewan. No silly questions, only silly answers. But do you know if you can get a remote for a point and shoot? I've never seen one, but there's bound to be someone that does it. I don't know if any of the Canon, the mini simple remotes that you can get for a fiver on eBay, whether they interface with any of the other point and shoots. I've got a G12 here. Let's see if there's got anything on there. This is where I'm going to have to show my age. Got to put my glasses on. There's a USB there. Yeah, there is a remote trigger on the G12. It's you're not going to see this, I suppose, but there you go. There's a little picture there that you can just get it. And inside you've got a little cable release thing that's probably sort of 1/8 inch. So you can get them.
Sorry, one on eBay, G12, for £4.
A remote trigger for a G12 at £4. Buy it, I'll give you the money back. But there you go. I mean, that G12, I was saying last night on the big show, this was my pick of the week. Absolutely love this. Someone, their company had a G12 and they wanted the stop motion and time-lapse stuff that's on a G9 because this one doesn't do it anymore. And they said, would you swap? And I said, yeah, absolutely. No question. Swap in a heartbeat. And I had a little few test shots in the hotel room this week when I was playing around, and it works great. Playing around doesn't sound good in the hotel room, does it? No. Oh, 50mm equals 1/50th of a second, 100mm equals 1/100th of a second. No, I mean, it's... Yeah, okay. As you're going out across your focal length, and you're getting further and further away, then yes, your speed of capture will need to decrease at 1/100th, 1/250th, that kind of thing. If you're throwing up a 400mm lens and trying to shoot 1/15th, then you're asking for trouble. I'm not saying that, but generally, if you were talking about going out with the dog and a 50mm fixed lens, I think there's an awful lot you can shoot in the ranges, probably up to maybe even 200mm. I mean, I've got a 70-200mm sport lens, and that I've shot with that at 1/30th of a second before, and I actually took a picture of the moon handheld with that lens with 3 2x converters on it with manual focus, and I handheld that pointing upwards to the sky for 1/30th and still got a decent image. So, you know, yes, it's a factor. You're absolutely right, Decroiter, but it's still. That's the basic part. I mean, if you've got a 50mm lens and you've even got a small amount of movement taking something that's macro, you're going to see it instantly. If you look at the picture on the Flickr group of the green thing last week, you know, if you that kind of range, you'll see movement very, very quickly anyway. But yeah, generally speaking, go for the longer length and you'll have a trouble. Is it a good idea to post images online that include the EXIF data, as this data includes lens, camera, serial numbers, that kind of stuff? There's a lot of programs you can get for EXIF data removal. There's a program that I used years ago. I think it was called Rename It or Rename Me or something like that. And it was a Mac batch program. I think it was just basically effectively an Apple script with a bit of Cocoa front end. And you took all your images and you preset what you wanted it to call them and you just dragged them all in and it just swapped all the EXIF data out. I'm not sure if serial number goes on EXIF data. I've never thought about that, actually. But, I mean, if they got your serial number for your camera, I'm not sure what they're going to do with it. But maybe that's because I haven't got a criminal mind. Who knows? But, I mean, it's stuff like where you live and that kind of thing. There was a question, actually, that's coming from one of the guys talking about the different types of metadata and that kind of stuff. And I've got to say, Tom, there's a guy called Tom Gifford. He's in Portland. He said, I've started to post some photos on the internet like Flickr and Facebook. I'm wondering if I should get some privacy concerns. I understand that there's a metadata. It's probably going along with all photos. First off, what's metadata? And read about EXIF, IPTC and those kind of things. Well, it's just different codes, different kinds of metadata. But your metadata is effectively the tagging information for your photo. And a lot of softwares, you can switch on and switch off what it is that you want to do. So your location stuff should, on a GPS camera, be able to be switched on and switched off, but it may not be. But you can get programs that will strip your metadata. Once you open it in Photoshop, there's 95% of the fields that are listed there in the EXIF data. You can go through and you can strip that out and change it and put whatever you want in. As to where you live, well, I mean, I kind of... You know, go back to Steve Jobs, people knew his house address. I follow Woz on Twitter, and every night he tells me he's walking his dog in the local park and there's a GPS reference on it. And then when he gets home, he says, I'm back home, and he's mayor of his own house. And it's got a GPS rest 600-something-something drive, Los Gatos. You know, I know exactly where Woz lives. I could go around and knock on the door and ask for a cup of tea, and he'd probably let me in and give me a cup of tea. I think you can get a bit anal sometimes about worrying about who you are and what you are and that kind of thing. I don't know you're always at danger. There's a lot of famous people who don't go behind the Iron Curtain of bodyguards and that kind of thing, and they're okay. And tomorrow I'll be down at Old Salts Rugby Club getting the crap kicked out of me, probably. I wouldn't worry about removing EXIF data too much. I mean, it's quite interesting sometimes when people have posted stuff on Flickr and you pull the full image down, the EXIF data's still there. You know, they're saying, oh, I'm struggling with this, I'm struggling with that. Well, if you're just looking at the EXIF data, you can kind of tell what it is that they're struggling with. You know, they've underexposed, overexposed. There's, you know, they've gone for a depth of field issue that with you know, 5.6, and they should have gone with 2.8 or something like that. You know, you'll get other information from it. It's a Samsung. Mini USB is the only interface. I think you're stuffed then, Sarah. You're not going to get a remote shoot for it. If you've got the exact serial number or the exact code number for it, I'll get my assistant here to look it up. There was a remote for the old Fuji S7000. That was a large fixed point and shoot lens, says Russ. Good point. Good question, rather. Generally, I use 18-125 Sigma DC lens on my 400D for when I'm out walking. Yeah, I mean, that's a decent enough lens. The key's going to be what ISO you're shooting at and then your shutter speed. So, I mean, whenever you put your camera lens up, just do a part press and you'll get the data of what you're shooting at the bottom. And if you get that part press and you show the data, then for the next split second, you know, second and a half, 2 seconds, you can actually use the wheel on the top of the 400D to rotate the priorities of what you want to change, even if you shoot. So put it onto the P professional mode, do that part press, and then you can roll that backwards and forwards and it'll change both of the settings equally to keep the same exposure. So two stops down on your f-stop, two exposures up to maintain it. Hi, Teresa. I found out where Andy Anatko lives after he posted a picture on Twitter, but I'm not going to Boston, says Russ. Teresa says she's in the Boston area. Maybe she could go around. It's a Samsung S8600, says Sarah. Just having a quick look on Twitter, and no one sent a question in. Okay. There you go. Never mind. Any other questions? Are we calling it quits there? Oh, it's all gone quiet. You got any questions?
Oh, no, sorry, I was looking it up.
No questions, don't worry, it's fine. That's all right, that's 20 minutes. One person on the microphone, 20 minutes, is what I've ever said, so that'll do as a show.
So did, I have a question actually.
Go on then.
Did you enjoy yourself on the London?
I really did. I really, really did. Because I've had a gig kicking before Christmas on that article, and I've had a listener put a really nasty review in iTunes, and I've tasked him over it, and he's taken it down, and I'm actually having a dialogue with him now that's quite fruitful. But you know, there's a kind of bit of you that thinks maybe I'm an arse, and it was nice to go out last week and have people ask questions that I knew the answer to, and be astounded by the results that they got with simple stuff. Do you remember when we went out of the market and we turned left towards the church? Everyone was stood there, and it was like a triangulation of railway lines, and a lot of people were looking up and seeing the new building. No clue what it is.
The shard
up in the top through the gap, and everyone was shooting it and trying to get this nice picture of the shard, and they ended up with black solid lines around it. And there was a guy called Martin there who works with Steve Neighbour, and he was saying, you know, what can I do here? And I got him to shoot in manual. I mean, he basically didn't know how to fit the lens when he first started. He got his wife's camera. And he was saying, well, you know, why do I want to shoot in manual? That's the mistake mode, unquote, Missy. And basically I was saying, well, you know, use it as a light meter. So take a reading off the building, take a reading off the stuff that's underneath that you don't want to completely blacken out. And then try and favour between the two. So he took a reading off the side of the rust that was on the side that would have been great, you know, like the old and the new, the rust and the new building. And he got 1/80th, took a metre off the building and got 1/400th. And I said, right, well, what you want is a manual setting that'll give you exactly what you've got currently on f-stop, but you want to expose at 1/250th, something like that. And he put the camera up, focused on the building for his autofocus, took the picture, and all of a sudden all of that rust that was around the sidings and so on just showed through as well. It was, but you'd still got the very blackness around the outside, so it was just where some light was catching. And it's split metering is one of those things. I use it an awful lot. I use the camera as my light meter. Just put it on spot metering. I never have it on evaluative metering, because that will blow out certain areas very easily and darken areas too much. Keep it on the spot metering. Take the point between the two areas where you've got high illumination and low illumination, but don't look for things that are white whites and black blacks, you know, so you're not looking to try and balance that range of images. Look for what's the lowest point I would like to still show up, and what's the highest point I would like to not burn out, and balance between those two, and just favour one or the other. So if you want a bit more in the darkness, I'd have said go for 200th of a second, maybe just a bit lower. But because we wanted to favour the building on that, we said, no, let's go up to 1/250th. It's a really neat trick. It's really quick and easy to do. Take your meter in while you're on professional setting P, and then turn it onto manual and shoot your manual with the chosen picture.
I was obviously standing somewhere else at that point, because I didn't hear you explain that.
Yeah, the other one that was useful that came out on the day as well was Aaron was saying, you know, what should I do here? And he was looking at shooting a picture in the roof, and it blew out a bit because he'd shot the sunlight reflecting. And I said, well, don't try and shoot exactly where the sun is. So he said, give me a for instance. I said, right, well, there's a stall over there. Go and shoot a decent picture of the light bulb. And he's looking at me like, what? Goes over and has a play and comes back with everything either blown out or everything dark with just the bulb in focus. And I said, well, the problem is that you're trying to meter off the bulb or off the background, and the bulb and the background are two completely different things. They're at the opposite ends. If you've got a light source that you'd like to capture, look at what the light source is falling on that's near to it. So right next to where he was shooting, there was just like a twig ball that was 2 foot to the side of the light bulb. And the thing to do there is meter off that little twig thing, because it's as close to the light bulb as you're going to get, because it's reflecting the light off the light bulb, but it's also not going to blow out the background. And he, when we got into the Where was the pub that we went to that was by London Bridge, and there was the big mall to the right of it? Oh. With a big glass roof. There's a pub anyway, by London Bridge. There's a lot of pubs that day. Yeah, but there's like a Morley-type place with a big high-arch glass roof, and there was a lot of sun coming through that, and he wanted to capture the sun, and he realised that instead of trying to shoot the darkness of the mall and blow out the roof, or shoot the roof and have the mall completely dark, what he should do is meter off where the brightest reflection of the sun is, where the light's coming through, the shaft of light's coming through and hitting the brickwork, and get that lightest point, and then the image will balance. That's another way. It's effectively split metering again, but it's quicker and easier to do. Look where the light's falling rather than trying to shoot the light or the darkness at the opposite ends. There you go. Is my tea getting cold here? Yes, absolutely. Could you do HDR? No, I hate HDR. People like Trey Ratcliffe go overboard with HDR too much, not real looking. Just don't like to see too much of it if it's such a great technique. I've done HDR a little bit myself, and I like it if all it's doing is kind of just doing that kind of almost like a spot leveling exercise where you're just bringing up some of the stuff that's too dark or taking down some of the stuff that's too light. Nothing much more than you'd probably get through processing a raw image properly through Bridge. I just don't like the stuff that's real wacko. I saw some pictures of some trains a little while ago, and the trains just looked terrific. You know, they were like they'd been drawn badly in watercolours, and the guy was colourblind. I'm not a fan. Don't like HDR at all. Not having it. Instead of asking another question, the chat room's now gone into full agreement mode. Mostly Lisa is doing a world tour using an iPhone S as a camera and Camera Plus. That's because she can't. Well, she's not doing a world tour because she can't get back in the States, can she? Oops. Which having a boyfriend who lives in the States is a bit of a mistake. Right. Any more questions? When's the next photo walk?
We haven't planned one, but it's probably not a few months. Much time, probably for the next one, let everyone recover and get their energy back.
I'm ready this week.
Juices flow here.
Here's the thought. One of the questions that came up while we're in the pub, we had been drinking though, so do be careful, is that we've got the Bagel Tech Bash on the 6th of July this year. Make sure you book yourself, get onto that. Make sure you get a day off work. Make sure you're coming down. Get yourself a hotel room on that evening. And I've got a mate who's got a really big studio, really nice studio up in Tamworth. I need to have a word with him to find out how much it's going to cost, but we could potentially book that out from sort of 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So we've got 5 hours, and he's got a mass of lights up there. And we could have, instead of a Bagel Tech photo walk with Elmug, what we could do is have a Bagel Tech photo day. So we've got the whole afternoon, because we can recover in the morning from the bash, and then we can go up there after the alcohol's got out of the system, and we can have a studio shoot. And Alex and I can sit there and help you with lights. Alex can bring some fixed lights or something like that to show you how to shoot fixed. And I'd be learning there, because I've never shot really under fixed lights. I've always gone for flash. And I can give you some stuff on flash. And we've got each other as models and things like that. So, you know, there's plenty of people to shoot and plenty of things to do, and we can have a... I can show you as well one technique that's really good for big areas, which is to put the camera on full manual, and while the camera's exposing, you fire the flashes off manually, and you get a much better glow off the flash rather than it kind of be like this big intense light with darkness all around it. You get a much more of an ambient. In fact, I took this guy's images of his studio because he couldn't do it. Rather than a photo walk, yes, interesting. Alex is talking about a Sherlock theme photo walk. That sound good. But are we getting the thing? He was talking about going around the places where they filmed it, rather than the real Sherlock locations. Because 22 Baker Street is like Nationwide Building Society, isn't it?
The way he explained it to me is he was going to do a quiz, and you'd have little teams. You'd have to go out and produce photographic evidence that you solved the riddle or the clue or whatever.
Oh man, yeah, definitely.
And then. So you'd have one little team doing it, another little team, and then that way you wouldn't all stick together, but you'd all have proof that you been to the right place, you found the right clue.
And you had to take a picture of the clue, or the clue. Oh, yeah, I mean, no question of that. 221B, yeah, it's 221B is Nationwide Building Society or something like that.
It is there, but it's not a real address.
No, it is, it is.
Sure?
Yeah, I know this because I did a course once at a firm, and there was a girl on the course who I got on rather well with. And when I asked her what she did, she said she worked for, and I can't remember if it was Abbey National or Nationwide Building Society. Abbey National, I'm thinking. But she said one of her jobs was to deal with people who turned up at the door because they owned 221B Baker Street. It's one of those, definitely. Abbey National. There you go. Now it's Santander. Anything else? No, film locations in the original books. Oh, it's the locations in the original books. Oh, Alex is in the chat room. Good man. Right, we're done. I'm not going to have too much silence. That's the end. Thank you for coming to this very special edition. I don't know whether we'll post it or not. What do you think? Should we post it or not? Of Bagel Tech Photo. We'll be back again next week. Hopefully everyone won't be working or won't be sick, and we'll be able to do a proper show and catch up on all the news, because there has been a little bit this week. And we're going to have some phone stuff in a few weeks, because Mobile World Congress is going off as well, and you've got Macworld iWorld starting next Thursday, so there might be some photographic stuff associated with iOS and that kind of thing going off. So we'll definitely be there. Mac show's coming up next with Andy Anatko and Don McAllister and Chris and me and Dr. Happy Mac's coming back on. And Kyle's not here, but Gazmaz is on. There you go. See you next week. Thank you.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.